Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Our guest is Robert Spencer. He is the author, most recently, of Confessions of an Islamophobe, a subject we'll turn to here in a moment. But Robert, I did want to ask you to drill again down a little bit more on how the trends that we're seeing in Europe are transforming the continent and Britain, for that matter, and such a signal warning to us as to where this leads if, in fact, one acts in a manner that is reasonably interpreted by these Sharia-adherent folks as submissive. When it's done in Europe, it's something that is clearly now palpable. It's not so obvious here, but are there lessons we should be learning from what is taking place there for what is in the offing here?
Oh, well, there's no doubt about it. Absolutely. The Quran, for example, it says that women should pull their veils over their bosoms, cover themselves so that they do not be molested. And so the implication is that a woman who is not covered can be legitimately molested. And this is what the Muslim migrants in Europe are acting upon on a more or less regular basis, on an alarmingly regular basis. As a matter of fact, we see the massive increase in rape and sexual assault in Sweden, in Germany, elsewhere, all because of this assumption that uncovered women are essentially fair game. And not only that, but the further Quranic directive that infidel women who are the spoils of war, who were taken in jihad, can be made into sex slaves. This is also in the Quran. And so you have this massive epidemic of sexual assault and rape that is sanctioned by Sharia. And so it's just something that's going to come with a massive influx of Muslim migrants. Obviously, not all of them are going to behave in this way. But those who do will consider that they have this justification, that it is something that is permitted by Allah, by the supreme and only God. And so you're not going to be able to stamp it out with education or with flyers or posters, as the Germans are trying to do, telling people to behave and not to grab women in swimming pools and this kind of thing. It's just not the assumption that they have as a result of Islamic culture and Islamic law.
Yeah, grabbing and groping and so on is just one manifestation of this. I think rape, including of children and even boys, is now becoming altogether too common as a result of this practice. And Robert, again, I want to draw you out on a point that is generally not understood in the West, and that you have worked tirelessly through your books and your videos and your various public appearances, speeches, and columns to clarify, and that is, there is in the Quran a body of guidance and commandments from Allah for behavior that we would describe as utterly antithetical to a religious practice. And yet Muslims, not all of them, as you've said, but Sharia-adherent Muslims at least, believe is their duty as they conduct their affairs. And whether it's with respect to their wives or daughters or other family members or neighbors or business associates or community members or strangers, most especially Christian, Jewish, or infidel strangers, are all rather carefully laid out under Sharia, and by and large, particularly in the parts that are absolutely dispositive, it is pretty hard on all of those that I've just mentioned. If not absolutely deadly, certainly onerous, painful, demeaning, and unpleasant.
No doubt about it. And these things are just not only are they not known, these things are not really even believed when you tell people about them, because they're just so unbelievable. A religion that mandates violence, a religion that calls for the subjugation of those who do not believe in the same way, that calls for political action and the imposition of a political system that is violent, authoritarian, and supremacist in its very nature. People just don't believe that this kind of thing could be possible, and they think that, well, there must be something wrong with you if you're saying this, because I think there's a core assumption in the West that anything that goes by the name of religion is, by that very fact, benign and good for you, and teaching the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, and we should all just get along, and that's all there is.
Well, and we all worship the same God, for example. That's another confusion that's been introduced. Robert, one thing that I'm just struck by, and we have discussed this in the past, and I find it important to emphasize wherever possible, is I think that one can argue that within Islam, there are pietistic practices that are religious in character that are not the kind of thing that we have just been describing, that are dangerous, malevolent, violent, misogynistic, and so on. But what you find, if you look at what its adherents, again, call Sharia, is basically a political, military, and legal code, some would call it an ideology, that has all of the awful stuff in it. And to the extent that people in our country, imbued with this tolerance of religion that we find enshrined in our Constitution, can't get their heads around a faith commanding this sort of thing, I think it does make it easier to understand and to object to and resist if it is described properly as an ideology. What say you on that score?
Yeah. You know, Frank, it's very important. Many, many people, as I speak around the country, they say, look, you're talking about a religion, and so there's not anything you can do about this. This is a religious principle, and so we have the freedom of religion in the United States. Well, in the first place, I reject the idea that the freedom of religion is somehow a license to commit sedition or subversion. It is clearly not that, and clearly was never meant to be that. The freedom of religion is, on the contrary, something that was designed to strengthen the republic and to enable its flourishing, not something that was designed to weaken it or be some sort of a poison pill that would ultimately result in its dissolution. It's not a license to break any other existing laws. And people have a fundamental misunderstanding on that point. But also, it's not generally known what you've been talking about, that Sharia is a political system and not just a religious one. And it makes political claims. It is, as I said before, authoritarian and supremacist in its political extent and in its political extension. And so consequently, it seems to me that a great deal of the problem that we have in dealing with the terror threat and with the Sharia threat in the United States is a lack of recognition of that. And if we were to have a societal recognition that there is political Islam, that political Islam is part and parcel of Islam as such, and that we are not trying to restrict Muslims from praying five times a day and believing Muhammad is a prophet and reading the Quran and so on, but we are only targeting to, in our own self-defense, the political aspects of Islam that are incompatible with constitutional freedoms and principles, then I think that many people who think that much of the objection that people have to the idea that any of this should be resisted at all would melt away.
Yeah. Well, I don't think so. I think this is a very clear-eyed and thoughtful assessment of the situation. It's one I believe we ought to act on, and hopefully the president's new national security strategy will give us a basis in policy of the United States government to do so. We have to pause for one last break. We'll be right back with more with the director of Jihad Watch, Robert Spencer, right after this.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.